Tim and Tom with Tim Bradstreet and some guy you never heard of. Until now.
Well, hello and welcome to Blood Red Guts with Tom Racine and Tim Bradstreet. Well, that's not really the name, but we're kind of discussing that, actually. This is our second podcast here for the Tim Bradstreet Experience. And actually, we were looking on the forums. We'd like to thank you people for writing in. We've been getting some great responses, and we've only had one show, so that's very cool.
Yeah. Kind of pales in comparison to the Jimi Hendrix experience.
Well, yes. But, you know, he's been dead a long time, and it's time for another experience. There hasn't been another experience.
That's what I like about you, Tom.
We need experiences. Besides, I'm married to Kim Hendrix, which is of no relation, but still right. Spelled the same way with the cool X and everything.
So. Your last name is spelled with the cool X?
Her last name is with the X, yeah, Hendrix.
Her last name?
Yeah, mine's Racine, remember?
That's right.
Because it's the Tom Racine.
See, that's
Tim
why
Bradstreet.
It never...
All right. Married to an actress. She has her own name. It's a wonderful name.
I really shouldn't have drank all that cough syrup before the show.
I told you, damn it, man. Vodka, nothing but vodka.
Robitussin and vodka.
This gentleman, Nolan, who wrote several wonderful things on our forum, had a couple of very good ideas for suggestions for names.
Nolan's an old pal of the Tim Bradstreet website. Said no, sorry, got off my little area, my cone of silence.
Did I say you could speak?
Nolan has been a supporter for a long time, and I think he first hit me up a couple years, three, four, maybe longer, I don't know, because it's so hard to keep track, but... He's working on a little Blade Runner animated short film and stuff like that. But he has graciously come over and joined the forums, and we love his viewpoint, and he's always got some cool things to say. And he was actually the only one, I think, right? The only one?
The only one I've seen so far who we're calling out for some names.
Well, I kind of put the kibosh on that, too. I went, well, maybe it's not such a good idea.
Yeah,
we
that's
have
right.
a contest.
That's right. And yet, he did it anyway. So he's blazing a trail because we may actually have a contest. I'll talk about that in just a second. Nolan came up with a couple of interesting names. The Racine Street Chronicles, which could be based in Chicago, because there is a Racine Street. It's where Sean Connery died in The Untouchables.
That's
was on
right.
Racine Street.
That's right.
Casting Shadows, or Podcasting Shadows, which is kind of creepy. I like that one. And Rubbing It Raw, which is just kind of sick, but cool in its own way, since it is Raw Studios. So
I favor Rubbing It Raw. But,
so do I,
but
in general.
We could never do it, and dare you.
We'll certainly not get on iTunes with Rubbing It Raw. I know that much.
That's true. But you know, it's like he's just casting shadows, and like I was telling you a few minutes ago when we were kind of warming up.
Yeah. If you know what I mean.
I thought that sounded a little slightly too much too pretentious, and... But somehow Podcasting Shadows doesn't sound so pretentious.
It sounds like maybe Rod Serling should be introducing us. Casting Shadows. That would be kind of fun.
If we could get...
we'll do a seance.
Someone with a good Rod Serling voice. We need to get Jim Daly on here so we can have Chris Walken on sometime. And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So in general, we'd like to actually sort of make this official. We don't have a date on it. We'll talk about that later. But Tim apparently is willing to part with an original piece of artwork, which he will describe in just a second, because he laid it out to me and there was like 100 words involved, and I only remembered 20 of them. So, but it is an original piece of artwork that he is willing to give up. And what is it exactly you are willing to give up to the contest winner of the name, the Tim Bradstreet Podcast?
Yes, we're going to do, as you said, a contest. A contest. What am I, from Baltimore? We're going to do a contest, and we're going to start a thread. I'm going to start a thread on the forum, the Raw forum. And the winner of that contest, this is a... For those of you who aren't following, like me, a contest, because I can't remember if you said it or not, a contest for the name of our show. So the winner of that contest, we will select a winner based off all of the entries. And so, you know, put some thought into it, because the winner is going to get a original piece of artwork, pen and ink and brush from the deleted Kuwaiti scene animation from the Punisher Extended Cut DVD.
That's right, people. This is real stuff here. This is not... I said, how about an autographed copy of Bad Planet? And he went, no! I'm going to dig into my archives.
No, we're going to bust an original out for somebody who comes up with our name.
This is actually his daughter's college fund we're talking about here. So this is a big thing.
We're dipping into it for you cats.
So seriously, once you see the thread up there on the Raw boards, you need to start submitting some ideas, and we'll choose the best one, and then we'll give you details on that
later. So that's very, very cool.
Yeah, and feel free to steal from someone else who's not on our forum. I mean, if you come up, if you have a good idea, we can steal before someone else comes up with it. We're more than welcome for that.
Exactly. So again, thank you to everybody who's been writing to the forums. I personally find it really, really interesting, and I love to hear what you people are talking about. People are talking about the our love of M. Night Shyamalan's films. And
how do you say that? Is it Shyamalan?
I just try to blow by it and hope nobody would notice. So M. Night Shyamalan. M. Knight. We'll just call him Knight. Okay, that's what Samuel L. Jackson calls him Knight, so I'm just going to call him Knight. That's
I was calling him Knight last week, like we, you know, we like hang out and have coffee.
Yeah,
you know?
He's actually in the other room drinking a Frappuccino right now.
I don't drink coffee, but I would I'd drink a coffee with Knight in a minute.
And people were talking about how much they were excited to hear about your love of the movie Sunshine and also The Fountain and things like that that have been overlooked, so that's great.
It's nice to know there's people out there with a discerning viewpoint in film, and you know, many of those guys missed The Fountain too.
Yeah.
People that we've talked to. So, you know, it's kind of nice to have that network and know that what we were talking about actually was true to a point. No one got to see the damn film. So.
Yeah, and definitely if we can pump up things like that, because those are the kind of films that need to get made so that other great science fiction and fantasy films can get made. You know, I want to talk about that later if we get to talk about the movie Beowulf, because I think it's very important.
It can or can't get made.
Yes, or can't get made because of that.
That's always a big part of it.
Well, we're going to start off with a discussion on the comic book side of things and what's going on with Bad Planet number 4, apparently, is coming out in a few weeks, November, you're saying? It's ready to go?
Because really, why have a show unless you can plug your own stuff?
Damn straight.
Yeah, we wrapped on Bad Planet 4 last week,
cool.
You know, it's just the process of getting this stuff done, working a full-time job, you know, and having a family, so basically two or three full-time jobs necessitates the comic book work getting done in a fashion that isn't exactly quick.
but still high quality.
But luckily I only have 8 pages to do of Bad Planet 5 because... 14 pages of that are by Dave Kendall. They're already done.
Excellent.
Which we've also previewed a page of that on the webs on the forums. So.
I did want to say that I read number 3 and I really like the 3D effect. I was surprised. I thought it was kind of gimmicky, and then I put the glasses on. I was like, wow, it really works. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
You know, and also it's, and I don't know if we mentioned this last week or not, but when you look at those pages in 3D, you know, try to look at them in some good direct light. Light those pages up.
Yeah, it really does help.
It really will help the experience, and also tip the book at an angle, kind of away from your eyes a little bit, okay. And that'll also help the experience.
Say a few Hail Marys, drink a tequila,
exactly.
But in general, I was impressed with the printing process. I thought it was pretty cool. So
well, you know,
well done.
We really didn't want to get a slick paper for that, and we did it on kind of a flatter paper because we'd already established that look. But we knew it had to be a little bit slicker to you know for the 3D to really work very well. And the coolest thing about that I've kind of like just hearing people talk about it, you know, here and there, is that people. I mean, we've heard from some people that aren't even comic fans that, for whatever reasons, they heard about it and they went and checked it out. They bought it and they were like, "Wow, this is incredible." And so yeah, that's been really great news. I mean, the fact that, you know, because for us it was not a gimmick. It was like, this is just something we really wanted to do because we thought it'd be cool.
Yeah.
There's no gimmick about it. It's just that we're trying to, you know, there's this whole and people you know, keep your eyes and ears open. Over the next couple of years, you're going to start seeing 3D come back in a huge way. And I'm talking, I don't know how much of that will be comics, but certainly in film. Spielberg's working on a 3D. The movie that we're making, Dark Country, for Sony and Hyde Park, is going to be 3D. Theaters are starting to really put money into this.
They're re-releasing Nightmare Before Christmas this year in 3D.
Fantastic.
Which I love that film. I couldn't go, if you haven't seen that film, which I'm sure you have because you're all really cool people, but man, that's one of my favorite animated films ever.
Yeah.
And it's being re-released in 3D. I think that's very cool.
I feel like a node. But the cat that did James and the Giant Peach, what's his name?
Henry something or other.
Yeah, and didn't he direct Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yeah, I think so.
I love that guy.
Yeah, that guy. The whole thing. I mean, it's actually probably Tim Burton's, you know, greatest milieu is the animation thing. We can talk about him an entire show probably about that, the ups and downs. But
that particular director and Tim Burton have a great rapport. I mean, they both have very similar sensibilities, so it's like a perfect marriage.
Yeah, it is. Henry Selick.
Henry Selick. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah,
God. I love James and the Giant Peach. That's such a great movie.
Yeah, it's another one of those. It's kind of funny. All these great movies get made, and then you know they complain about the certain animation that comes out of Disney, but then these movies come out, and no one sees them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I'm sure film. I'll get some flack about this, but I really, you know, as much as I love Selick or however you say his name, I wasn't exactly in a rush to go see Monkey Bone.
Yeah, that's probably because it was, you know, kind of in the comic book milieu, and look, and it was Brendan Fraser, so it was kind of like,
I'm kind of hot and cold on Brendan Fraser. Yeah, what's this thing Coraline that he's doing?
This is from Neil Gaiman. It's a novel. It's a kid's book, I believe, actually, sort of, you know, in
it's
terms
like a
of
children's story, right?
Yeah, and as far as Neil Gaiman can go. Yes. But it's definitely, I've seen the book, and it's very, very cool stuff. So obviously, and it looks right up his alley, Henry Selick's alley. So I'm actually really excited about this. It's going to come out later in 2008, apparently.
I love the movie poster for it. It's fantastic. Yeah. You know, I love it when horror authors or authors in general kind of switch gears into a different genre, and with Gaiman kind of going into children's stuff, you know, it reminds me a lot of Clive Barker going into that same realm.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just, you know, he's a great writer, so, you know, you'd think that he could probably handle different kinds of material, and it's nice to see people switch gears once in a while.
Yeah, and I also like, I've always been a huge fan of things like Edward Gorey and those kind of like dark Victorian-esque things. Where
it's like, what was it, Charles Adams who did the Adams Family strip? Mm-hmm. See, I know some strip stuff.
Hey, there you go. Well, then, we'll
and get that stuff's to incredible. And that's the same. You're talking about the same thing there.
Yeah, Edward Gorey is just such a dark. I mean, he's got this one ABC book called The Gashly Crumb Tinies, and it's like B is for Basil pursued by a bear. It's all these kids who die.
Oh,
basically.
I know that book. Yes,
my favorite is N is for Neville who died of ennui. What a great line. I just love that.
Well, getting back to the 3D thing for a second, there's also people putting a tremendous amount of money right now into the research of home players too that will play back that 3D
cool
experience, and it's really kind of going to take off again in a big way. We're going to have a resurgence of 50s craziness for 3D, but it's going to be 10 times, it's going to be 100 times what it was then.
So that's Bad Planet 3 in 3D. Bad Planet 4 is coming out in November, and you guys are working on something else called The Lichen. Tell me about this. What's going on with that?
Oh, right. Yeah, The Lichen. I'm really excited about this. It's a period werewolf comic story. I think it's one we're really hoping to turn around into a film. But, you know, this is... Everyone says, "Oh, I'm working on a vampire thing. Oh, I'm working on a werewolf thing. I'm so sick of. I'm almost sick of the genre because there's so many people working on this stuff now." But
we got to find other monsters, David.
Well, you know, it's like monsters will never go out of style, but you know, it just seems like we've been inundated recently. The thing that makes The Lichen, which is, you know, I like to think of it as a working title, but Tom Jane doesn't care. He likes the title. I think it's. I'm going to attack our own selves here for a second, but I think
the inner workings of Raw Studios.
I think it's a little derivative of the Underworld franchise. Not that they created that word.
No, of course not, but that's what's current right now.
Right, yeah. And people will identify it with that film franchise. And I almost think it's better, you know, if you want to say, why don't we just call it Lycanthrope? I think that'd be cool, you know, if you want to keep it simple. But, you know, it's a period tale. And it takes place, you know, in like 1805, you know, on this island off the coast of between Africa and England. And God, I can't really talk too much about it, but great, great. It's written by I'm going to forget his name. He's a guy that works with David James Kelly.
There we go.
And Tom came up with the concept, Tom and David James, and David James Kelly wrote this outline for it, and Todd Farmer basically picked it up and ran with it, and wow, it's really, really cool.
So what stage are we at right now with this?
Well, I'm kind of going through right now all the scripts and putting my edits and notes in there. Then Todd will get that back, and I think Tom's already done his edits and notes. So, you know, Todd will go back, take all that stuff into consideration, and then hash out that last one. Then we'll read it again, and we're just going to fine-tune it at that point.
Anything visual happening at this point, or sketches, ideas? Got anybody working on that?
We have some great conceptual drawings by James Daly, who we thought was going to be the artist on it, but he ended up getting back out of freelance again, and he's got a real job. He gets paid a lot of money to do. So we have that conceptual work. And, you know, we're thinking along the lines, the look we want for this is in our first choice was to do this series, it's six issues, was Gary Gianni. And Gary Gianni, you would know from, well, he did a great little 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea book for Dark Horse, his own creation, Monster Men, I think it was called, for the Legend line, about a decade ago. And then he's also known for the illustrated Robert E. Howard stuff that Wandering Star does. They're illustrated books. And Gary's great stuff permeates the pages of Robert E. Howard's Solomon Kane, The Savage Tales of Solomon Kane. Also,
that's a great choice, though. I mean, just stylistically, yeah. That's a great choice.
Oh, well, he's woodcut. He's got this old style. And you know, it's just this look is something we really want to try to bring to the book. But unfortunately, Gary's not 25 anymore. He's, you know, 40, and
something wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
No, because we're all 40. But the thing is, Gary just—I mean, what that means—the way that's bad news—is Gary doesn't have to do a six-issue series anymore. You know, he could sit and do illustrations, make a buttload of money, and he doesn't really have to, you know, kill himself to work. He can just sit there and work on what he loves, and you know,
make him love this.
Well, going through. Well, you know, he does love it. That's the thing, is he does love it. But we're going to, the talk right now is that Gary and Mark Schultz are going to be our cover artists. And they'll do a kind of switch-off thing with the covers, as we did with Bill Stout and Mark Schultz on Alien Pig Farm.
Cool.
So I think Tom wants to change it. You know, I'm really trying to talk Tom into just keeping it to just the two. Tom was thinking about adding some other artists to that, but I don't want to water it down. You know, it's like we have the two strongest guys to do this material, you know, where else are you going to go? I mean, Joseph Clement Cole's dead. Bernie Wrightson doesn't work in ink anymore. And actually, he is working in ink. He's doing a new series for IDW. Dead, She Said, with Steve Niles, by the way. The tri-mover at the third head of Raw, Mr. Steve Niles, is got a new book at IDW. And with, you know, like they just did City of Others for Dark Horse. And now they're doing Dead, She Said, which is just,
And I like the title already.
I've already seen five pages, and they're awesome. Bernie Wrightson.
I think this is the kind of thing, I mean, this is something we should definitely update every week. I think it'd be really interesting to people to see this part of the process that no one ever sees. Even just the parts I was going to go off on a little tangent about when we were talking about Bad Planet number 3, choosing the paper stock, doing this, dealing with printers. I mean, I think that's really interesting stuff. No one gets to see this. So I'm excited just hearing about it. This first I'm hearing about the like and the background stuff, and we could do like a weekly update. I think that's great. You know, I think people will love hearing this stuff, how it develops
time. I mean,
Tell us and we'll stop it.
Well, yeah, one would think that when you get technical like that, that maybe it's not so interesting. But you also have to consider that there's a lot of, you know, hopefully a lot of young artists and a lot of young creators out there who are interested in the process. And if you're not necessarily a comics guy, but more of a film guy or a fan of Tom's, you know, most people know about this from the forum, our show from the forum, or my website. So I assume that most people are, you know, there for a reason.
Right, right.
That's the reason.
I know when I was, you know, 22, this kind of stuff would have been incredibly interesting and invaluable to me. I mean, to plug myself, because I get to do this occasionally, I'm on my Comics Coast to Coast thing. We just did an interview with Amy Lago, who's the syndicate editor for the Washington Post, and she deals with Burke Breathitt and Opus and all this stuff, and she did this great interview with us, and it was fascinating. I mean, how they choose it, what's really going on behind the scenes, the editor, and people love that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking this is great. I really think we should do this every week, and like an update.
Yeah, well, when we were starting, we couldn't find Jack for information.
No, just
wasn't, you know,
there was How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, and that was it.
And maybe you ran across a really good interview in the Comics Journal or something like that, but you had to look for it. I mean, there wasn't, you know, we were saying last week there wasn't any internet back then.
Here we are giving it away for free.
That's right, we're giving it away.
All right, well, moving on, trying to rein us in here just a little bit. That was great update from Raw Studios, Bad Planet, the Lycan, all of those wonderful things. Yeah, we're going to turn now.
Lycan's going to knock people's socks off. I'm telling you, I have a pretty high, you know, like. I have pretty high standards for the kind of stuff that I like, and the Lycan is hitting that wheelhouse. I think people are going to be genuinely.
Is it? You mentioned it's going to be a limited, six issue kind of series.
It's a 6-issue thing, and it makes a perfect 2-hour movie.
Is that what you guys want to focus on in general in Raw? To go back to the subject real quick, do you always want to do a 6-issue, 5-issue series, or do you want to start one that's an ongoing? Or what?
We don't really care about the format in terms of issue numbers. We always think that what we believe is that the story, the the concept dictates what it's going
to
end up being.
Well, I guess the question is, do you want it to be always a single story arc, or do you want, like, Superman number 653? I mean, do you want to do a character that just goes on and on and on and on?
Right now, we're not thinking in terms of ongoings, but, you know, like, you know, Bad Planet is actually a 12-issue series. And we're doing six now, and we're going to take a break, and we'll come back next year, and we'll probably start up the second six. It's huge. Lycan is a 6-issue self-contained thing that, you know, if people dig it, would be interesting to do a follow-up book. Because the characters are really enigmatic. I mean, the main guy in the Lycan, just sorry to keep yapping about this for a second, but I'm just so excited about it, is this guy named Absalom Coffin, and he's a ship captain. He's a hunter. And he's not necessarily a werewolf hunter. This isn't about werewolf hunters or monster hunters. They're just guys who are warriors, and they end up in a situation, a set of circumstances where they're faced with something they've never, you know, experienced before. And it all has to do with there's part of the legend of the Beast of Gavadon. I don't know how you say the name. The French town, in the French region in the 1700s, I think. The Beast of Gavadon. That's how I'm going to pronounce it. But
I would say Gavadon.
Yeah, it was the subject of the film The Brotherhood of the Wolf. But it's based in fact, factual accounts. So it's not like we're retreading territory. It's not like, oh, we're doing our version of Brotherhood of the Wolf. No, it's based on something that is factual. It's like somebody doing a movie about World War II. When you do another movie about World War II, you're not exactly ripping the last film off.
Right.
And it's also a tiny part of the story. It's not like that's what the story is about, but it does enter in.
Cool. Well, we are at a good time to take a break here, so we'll be right back. And when we do, we're going to start talking about movies, because God knows we can talk about movies.
Yeah.
And we are back. We're back. Welcome back. She needs some theme music now. No, cool. That's right. You know, that's another thing we can do is start, you know, see if we have anybody on the forums who's a musician. Get us some real music.
Well, let me talk to Joel Goldsmith and see if we can get his the rights to his dad's score for, what was it? 3 days in the valley? 2 days in the valley.
Yeah.
And there's a great cue on there where the clock's ticking. It's awesome.
Well, actually, we're going to come back to that subject at some point. Maybe not on this show, possibly the next show, where our friend Tim over here, apparently a bit of an aficionado of the film score world. And we're not just talking about John Williams' Star Wars record here. We're talking about real serious stuff. So we'll get back to that later, but listening in to that will be a good thing, and I'm totally lost. Look at my notes. Okay, movies.
I love a guy who can't find his place.
They're just going on. Keep talking.
Okay. He's got to know his limitations.
I think we should go right into Justice League. We were talking a little bit about this. There's more and more stuff coming out about Justice League. George Miller is doing it. They're looking for, I believe, a 2008 release, which means it's got to be in serious production right about now. But there's a lot of interesting things going on with it. You and I were talking about. The first one I would talk about is, and there may be something I'm missing, maybe I haven't read all of the articles on it, but at this point, they're not going to be using Brandon Routh or Christian Bale as Superman and Batman, even though those characters are indeed in the film. So what, I mean, they're all, we looked it up online, they're all being done by Warner Brothers. I don't quite understand why they aren't making much more of an effort to tie these series together. Doesn't that make sense?
You know, this is probably the topic of many internet threads at this point right now. And so it's probably getting done to death, and everybody's, you know, like running their spin of how and why it should be. So, you know, why shouldn't we? But I don't know really. I don't think you have to know squat about Justice League other than the fact that, you know, George Miller's directing it. And to me, that I already want to see it. Yeah. I'm not even a Justice League fan necessarily, yeah. but one of my favorite directors is helming this movie, and so now I'm interested. But, yeah, I you know, it's... I just want to say, it's like, did IQs just drop sharply while I was away? You know, I almost want to start reciting movie lines. Does Warner Brothers not see the tremendous upside to casting those two in the movie? I mean, it just seems ridiculous that they hadn't considered that prior to jumping in.
Yeah.
And maybe they did, but if they did and they went, nah, it's going to be too tough, logistically too difficult. Idiots.
Yeah. And it does. It sort of like, it blows me away that this is not obvious. I mean, in my cynical nature, whenever anybody asks me, I know a little bit about film, and my friends or family who ask me questions, I always say, well, basically the answer to every question is money. And so at some point, maybe they thought Christian Bale would cost too much. I mean, this is going to be an expensive movie. Let's face it.
It's definitely something you have to take into account.
There's going to be a huge cast because they're going to have everybody in it. The Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, everybody, Wonder Woman, the whole thing. So, you know, you can't just have every star in there. The payroll would be ridiculous. Just, so maybe that's part of it.
But just sticking around during this thing being cast is going to be as entertaining as watching the movie. I mean, people just love this stuff.
Yeah.
And just,
it's important. I think with Lord of the Rings was the first one that I noticed in terms of the internet world. People were just waiting for it to suck. And then when we saw the cast come out, I was really excited. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. When I saw Sir Ian McKellen get cast as Gandalf, I knew we were in good hands.
Yeah, yeah. It was instant credibility on this film.
So this one I'm a little worried about already because the first name being bandied about for Wonder Woman is Jessica Biel. And I'm like...
It's going to be another Fantastic Four.
Yeah, she's hot, but I don't think she's a very good actress, and she doesn't look anything. I mean, she's not imposing. Wonder Woman is, 6'9", and she's an Amazon, for God's sake.
And let me be straight. This is just simply Tom's opinion.
This is my opinion.
No one's writing this in stone. That's right. Jessica Biel doesn't have to suck.
No,
we don't think.
I have nothing against her. I think she's wrong for Wonder Woman. And honestly, I don't know who is right for Wonder Woman. I mean, that's a tough part to cast.
That was another thing you were talking about is that conundrum.
Yeah.
Who could play Wonder Woman? If only Sigourney Weaver was 20 years younger, had a rack.
And Lucy Lawless, at the time.
That's my ex actually kind of inspired.
Yeah, she's a little, I hate to say this because
she might
be a little too old now, and I hate to say that. But, I mean, she was Xena, she was imposing.
She's how old's Wonder Woman, for God's sake?
Yeah, really. Yeah, she's timeless.
I mean, maybe.
Lucy looks great.
If you don't have a slew of sequels backing up behind it, then maybe it makes sense, but.
Well, that would be...
It's weird. I never watched Xena. Couldn't have cared less about it.
I never really watched it either.
And yet, I absolutely love Lucy Lawless.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Anyway.
It's two hot girls hitting each other with sticks. Why were we not watching it? I don't understand.
It's not a prepubescent fascination either. It's I guess I've seen her in some other things. I guess, namely, Battlestar Galactica, and I think she's wonderful.
Yeah.
And so I've developed a appreciation for her.
Another question I was going to ask is that Justice League of America seems to me to be the perfect kind of movie that would be a motion capture 3D kind of thing. I mean, I totally think that I'm excited about Beowulf coming out in the sense that I think if Beowulf does really well, it could do a lot for adult animation, but it could also do a lot for, comic books are perfect for motion capture kind of movies. And I think that especially with Justice League, which even though I wasn't much of a fan, but Justice League was really about a lot of extraterrestrial stuff, really big alien sort of all sorts of cool stuff. And that's the kind of thing that would really lend itself to a 3D. Do you think that that's something that should be done, or would you rather see it in live action? Do you have any kind of a feeling on one way or the other with that?
I'm sorry, I was completely not paying attention to you. No, you know what? I was actually just looking because I noticed that Kieran Mulroney is credited as the writer on this film.
Right, he was an actor too.
One of the writers, and I want to believe that's Dermot Mulroney's little brother or older brother.
Somewhat, but actually, if you go up in details, might be a better chance.
I was just looking for career opportunities, which they're both in.
Okay. He's the brother-in-law of Catherine Keener.
She's great.
I love Catherine
Keener. God, I love her.
Yeah.
She is so excellent in everything I see her in. She's just very cool.
Brother of Dermot Mulroney?
There we go. It is.
Well done.
So if you want to see Kieran Mulroney in a film and you want to see something pretty fun, go rent Career Opportunities with Frank Whaley.
Cool.
And who's the Bill Forsyth, John Candy. Oh, yeah. It's just good stuff. It's fun. it's a John Hughes movie, I think.
Now, back to my deep, insightful question, which you ignored completely.
I'm That's a bastard okay. like that.
I should have known. I looked at him. He got the glaze. He was looking at my computer. IMDb. Okay. Anyway, motion capture in terms of Justice League and or any other comic book movie. Do you think that there's a future for that? Looking at, have you seen any of the stuff for Beowulf?
Oh, you mean doing 3D and using mocap for the... well...
Because I think it'd be, I mean...
I'm not a fan of it yet.
It hasn't proven itself, and I mean, I still think it looks pretty cool, and I think that a lot of comic books could really benefit from it. I think there's a lot of comic books that could come to life that wouldn't be able to be done any other way, and I think it'd be a very cool-looking way to bring a comic book to life.
Oh, I think it'd be great for a comic, because, you know, you've got the 3D lifeless eyes. It's, you know, it's they
like
have
a
not,
doll's eyes.
They have not perfected that yet, and hopefully they never will, because I really like watching actors on screen, but, you know, the thing is when I see the stuff I've seen on Beowulf, it makes me feel like I'm watching a video game cut film.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not impressing me yet. And there's probably even some really wonderful stuff in there that'll blow your mind, but there already is great 3D stuff stuck into real movies that'll blow your mind. I'm not on board yet, and please don't attack me for not being on board. I'm sure that there's a lot of people that think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I don't fault you for that. I just personally don't dig it. Yet. Yeah. It ain't there yet for me. One of the boons I see to it is that you would have never got Ray Winstone to be Beowulf because he's physically and age-wise, he's too old to play the character. But in a 3D animated film, you can voice act it with anyone you want. Right. And I think Ray Winstone is absolutely perfect. I think that you know, it's like it's almost you might even get a better performance out of it because if you'd have done it live action, you never would have got an actor of that caliber.
Right.
So, and on that level, I think it's fantastic. But you know, I'm looking at the 3D and I'm like, you know, Beowulf does kind of slightly resemble Ray Winstone, whereas Angelina Jolie character looks just like her. And I'm like, what's the point of that? I mean, just animate it and have these voices, and why make the 3D animations look like the actual people? It's like. Maybe people think I'm nuts about that, but I just think it's kind of lame.
Well, actually, no, I worked for an animator in Arizona. We did commercials like Sugar Smacks and Keebler Elves and stuff, and a guy named Tom Roth, and he worked for Disney and did all this great stuff and started his own little place. And he always said that why would you animate something that you could film? Animation was the whole point, was to break off to do fantastic, wacky things that you couldn't do in real life. And so, unfortunately, some of the 3D, I mean, the Beowulf thing is sort of the Polar Express is like, oh, okay, well, it's basically a film. You know, I mean, why are they not bringing some of this stuff in? And the other thing I don't know, you said the dead eyes, because that was the first thing that struck me about watching the Beowulf thing. It's like their faces still look like they're in L.A. getting way too much Botox. And yet they did Gollum in Lord of the Rings, and he looked fabulous. So do you think it's because it's more cartoony in Gollum almost? Or?
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that, you know, in Lord of the Rings, they're really, you know, for the most part, there's really just one animated character in that movie, so they can focus on that one thing, put all their energies into it, and put
That's
everything
true.
Into trying to give that guy life.
Yeah.
Circus with the, you know, I know they mo-capped and they had the sensors on him and stuff like that during filming, and he acted out the parts and stuff like that, and they basically just went in, you know, everyone knows the process.
Right.
But the thing is, God damn it.
He's building up steam, folks. Watch out.
Well, my point here is that, you know, I think the line was drawn perfectly before. You know, you do a Disney movie and Robin Williams plays the genie, and they animate the genie. They don't make him look like Robin Williams, but they do give him some of the same, you know, little ticks.
There's something there, yeah.
Yeah, and the way Robin Williams might say this as he's acting and enunciating, they'll give that genie those same kind of little qualities, but they stop there. In 3D animation, you don't have to stop there because you've got models, you've got 100 photographs of that person's face. I mean, I've worked in 3D. I mean, I've worked on a film that was a 3D film, and so I know how this process works, and I know that, you know, the wheels are off. You know, there's no one saying stop, and so right now it's everyone's exploring the possibilities. And I respect that, but at the same time, I mean, they need, and this kind of falls in Zemeckis' realm, they need someone to kind of say when enough is enough, and to kind of find a direction for what they are going to do. And who's to say who the arbiter of that good taste and that sensibility should be?
I vote for you.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, I'm just one opinion and probably in the minority. But, you know, Zemeckis will make his movie, and I hope it does well. I mean, I don't wish the movie badly.
I was going to say, I'm of two minds about this. Number one, I'm an English major, and I love Beowulf. I had an idea for a script for Beowulf, and what the hell? Angelina Jolie was nowhere near Beowulf when I read Beowulf.
And
I don't like the design of Grendel. He looks like a weird leprosy victim, and I'm really afraid of that whole thing. But on the other side, I want this movie to do really well because I do think it will open the doors for other movies like it. You know, because if this thing tanks, no one's going to want to go touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, it's going to be an Iron Giant situation. So, where that was a situation where the movie was really great.
Yeah, exactly. That one
still didn't make
great.
Any money, and they haven't made, you know, it really put the kibosh on that animation.
Right.
But everyone's talking about 2D animation. Why isn't there more 2D animation?
Yeah, well, because as much as I love Pixar, and don't get me wrong, I'm huge on Pixar, but I was talking to a friend of mine about this. They're in a little bit of a rut where the characters are starting to do the same thing where it's...
Well, it's a formula.
Yeah, they've found their formula, and it works, but now we need to do something a little different. You know, Ratatouille was great, but you know what? It's the same formula. It's about a character who feels out of place. He's got to find his place. He finds his place. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I think the more obscure you get, too... while I kind of like that, it isn't as good. It doesn't translate into box office dollars the way The Incredibles does.
Right. The Incredibles was sort of, for me, the they stepped outside the box. And that's Brad Bird, again, Iron Giant. I mean, we have to pretty much credit him. Incredibles, I think I could pop in probably every day and watch every day. I love that film.
Sure.
But in general, I'm a big
Where's
animation
my
fan.
Super suit? Sorry. Where is my super suit?
I am your greater good. I love that line.
Sam Jackson in a fucking...
All right. Beep. Blew it. Beep that's that. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I'm a huge animation fan, and so I want Beowulf to do well on that level because it kind of segues into something else I want to talk about after this. But because I think that there is a place for adult animation, but I understand the reticence to do it because if there's no box office, who's going to do it? I mean, the movies cost $100 million, and if they make 20, well, that's kind of stupid. You know. So.
Well, you know, hey, where was my point? I had a point here. My point was, it's like also... You know, you're going to do this 3D animated film, and you choose Beowulf. by the way, there's about 12 adaptations of that out in the last 20 years. And
Christopher Lambert had one, set in the future.
Yeah, right. And by the way, there's actually a really decent one that came out recently with Gerard Butler and Stellan Skarsgård that I think is a really interesting take on it.
Yeah.
And what's the gal's name from Dawn of the Dead remake? The main girl in that. She's in it too, and she's got a really cool part. I feel like I'm kind of a jerk because normally I want to be able to have those names at my fingertips, and normally they are. But she's just not someone I'm that familiar with. So
we can edit that in later if you like.
But just you know, just for all you guys out there that haven't seen Beowulf, this incarnation of Beowulf yet, you know what? It's very interesting. It's Beowulf and Grendel.
Oh, Beowulf.
Yeah, it's called.
This is the Christopher Lambert one. We're looking on IMDb right
now.
Yeah,
I wonder if that Christopher Lambert one was worth 2 cents. But,
there can be only one.
How dare you? I've really. Oh, how dare you?
Was she the sea hag?
The temerity. Oh, and I love Toni Curran. What a fantastic little young actor. I don't think she's on this first run. Sorry, I hate to talk about IMDb while I'm surfing it.
Sarah Polley,
yeah. Sarah Polley's in it. Yeah. And she's like the
Was she in Baron Munchausen?
No, she's way too... Well, if she was 5, she might have been in Baron Munchausen. And if you're right about this... I'll give
The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
She is. She's the little girl.
She's the little girl in Baron Munchausen.
About that. God, I love when I find this stuff out. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
I'm good at 6 degrees of 7.
You know, now that you say that, and I look at this picture, I can totally,
you can totally see it. Yeah,
it's
kind of funny. It's kind of creepy when you see that because I love that movie Baron Munchausen. Then you see her as an adult, and you're like,
I never would have thought of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
Cool.
It's like people didn't know Dean Stockwell was a child actor.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They only see him as the cigar munching, you know, older guy. It's right. Like, dude, haven't you seen The Boy with Green Hair?
Apparently not.
Yeah, well, it's hard to find on video, but.
Anyway, that was going to segue in the whole animated thing into a section I wanted to talk to Tim about. I'm putting him on the spot here about guilty pleasure movies where you have to defend your crappy film, probably from the 1980s when we grew up, but you have to choose a film that is generally not necessarily an Oscar winner or liked by a lot of people, but something that just sends you for a loop. And man, I have so many.
Ishtar would be a good one.
Exactly. To choose. Big Trouble in Little China is probably my favorite of that. But even that's kind of got a big cult following.
It's got
following,
a cult following, so it doesn't qualify.
So my choice for this week is heavy metal.
So you're asking me.
Yes.
But you're going to answer.
Well,
you're going to say
I'm giving you time.
First.
I'm giving you time. You're smoking. He's got a cigarette now. That means he's thinking.
I can smoke and I can sleep at the same time. So. All right, go, Ben.
But my choice would be Heavy Metal from 1981. I love that film. And it's one of those things that I think. Even at the time, I knew it wasn't a great film, but I was just so excited to see adult animation and science fiction and violence and boobs and the whole thing. And it's never been replicated. I mean, they haven't been able to. Why,
Tom? I'm going to squash you right now.
Squash me, baby.
Because here's the thing: you cannot pick a guilty pleasure as something that is universally loved.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm talking about the general public. Maybe everybody who's listening to this because they're cool.
The general public. It's like Spinal Tap, man. Everybody knows about heavy metal.
They know about it, but no one's seen it. No one I know has seen
it. And it's done so much time, you know, since it came out that a lot of those people have grown up. They've turned other people.
The only thing I'll say about it is that it did really well.
I want you to come up with something better.
Ah, okay.
Like if you liked Footloose.
No, I didn't.
Now, see, guilty pleasure, I think, has more than one meaning. It's not just. It's in a movie that you're embarrassed to tell people that you like. And I don't know that heavy metal qualifies. Well, I think heavy metal makes you cool.
In my life, see, you're surrounded by comic book geeks. So I'm surrounded by normal people in general. And my normal friends, all my family.
It's a low blow, Tom.
No, but I say that with admiration. By the way, he has two cigarettes going
now. And
not
true at all, by the way.
Two cigarettes going at the same time. I love
that. No, this isn't going at all.
Oh, it isn't?
No.
Looks like it is to me.
No, it's just that's because my other one's right next to it.
I got it. Most people have never seen it. Most people don't get it. They kind of look at me like I've got nine heads.
Okay, so in your world.
In my world. I always have to explain. It's like, no, it's really cool. You have to see it. And, you know,
I'm going
to
give you that.
Because I grew up with my brother Bill had heavy metal comic books, and I was like really intense to me. I loved the heavy metal one back in the 70s and 80s. Oh, it was so great. It was the best sort of thing to look at if you were a sci-fi fan. And so, and I guess what it is also is that I've never quite understood why it never took off in terms of. Why there weren't more things like it, which is, again, comes back to the Beowulf thing. I want Beowulf to do well so that people will maybe make these kind of films, you know, that maybe there can be interesting science fiction, interesting fantasy books made into animation. That's not Disney. It's not Pixar.
Yeah, and so. I may be wrong about this, but sorry, I'm still on Beowulf a little bit. But
go for it.
I thought Final Fantasy looked as good or better. You know, Final Fantasy almost makes more sense to do because
yes,
if you're going to do 3D animation... Yeah.
And it looks fabulous.
Is it really the smartest thing to pick a period film to do it in? I mean, that just, to me, it's like you want to do things with 3D animation that you can't do,
right?
You know, practically.
Right, right.
So, okay. So it'd have to be end of my
Gilliam, it'd have to be like an old Gilliam film or it'd have to be future film.
Could you imagine what Terry Gilliam would do with it? Background in animation? I mean,
see,
good
there's,
Lord.
There's something that Pixar could do. Hire Terry Gilliam for the next film.
Please hire Terry Gilliam.
He's like the king of animation.
Like to see Brazil, you know, a concept like that?
Right.
You know, as an animated film. And I'm not saying Brazil itself, but something in that vein, something in that Baron Munchausen, something in that classic Terry Gilliam, that mind of the auteur. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and maybe that's what they should do. We should write a letter to somebody and say, because he's got a new movie coming out called The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
I love the title.
And it looks great. You know what's cool about it? It has Tom Waits as the devil. So right there, it's already way cool.
That's good stuff.
So it's and again, it's Terry Gilliam, so it may never get made.
It's always fun when you try to think who you're going to cast as the devil, because it's either like someone very androgynous,
right,
or someone who you typecast them. In other words, like for me, Tom Waits is not a stretch to play Lucifer. You know,
that's right.
He already played Renfield, which is not too far removed. But
now David Hyde Pierce, there's an interesting devil for
you. Well, the same question applies to casting devil-like characters, not necessarily Mephistopheles himself. Mm-hmm. But like when we were working on Blade 2, and Guillermo was trying to cast Damaskinos, who's the kind of the main kind of villainous bad guy in it. You know, we were looking at Tim Curry, who also played the devil,
yes.
For Darkness, I guess.
Yes. I would just want to sit and talk.
Yeah, and we were looking at all kinds of guys like that, you know, and it becomes this typecasting thing. But there's also, you know, like Jeremy Irons, mm-hmm. you know, almost plays a kind of really great bad guy. So you always think of those kind of guys when you want to find somebody with some credibility to play that character. But I love the Tom Waits choice. That's cool.
Yeah, definitely. And anything Terry Gilliam does, I'll watch.
Trying to think of my guilty pleasure.
Yes.
I have so many.
Well, let's go with your definition. Something that you're a little bit embarrassed about. Some you're a big comic book artist, famous guy, whole thing. Tell me that it's Footloose and or Dirty Dancing or something. And
God, I almost could use Dirty Dancing. Ooh,
he went silent there for a little pause.
Yeah, I kind of did like Dirty Dancing, so that would be a guilty pleasure for me. I know what a. I can't use the word. It's just not politically correct. What a rube. But no, my guilty pleasure was going to be, it used to be Life Force.
Ah.
Okay. So, you know, I've been ragging on guys, or not necessarily guys, but ragging on this whole, like, we need to demand more of our films kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just as guilty as everybody else. I mean, that must be said. I have the same things. And it may not be X3, and, you know, it may not be Fantastic Four, which I think, you know, I'm not a fan of, but I understand people. Oh, sorry. But I don't want to get on that tangent again.
We'll never get off that one.
But you know, like Life Force used to be my guilty pleasure until I found out over the years that it's about 100,000 people, you know, a ton of other people that I know, their guilty pleasure too. So I'm like, wait a minute. It can't be a guilty pleasure anymore. We all, you know, like, we all know it's good. Wow. So, but Life Force is that one where with Matilda May walking around naked through the whole thing, Steve Rails back, Peter Firth, Frank Finlay from the old Three Musketeers movies. It's just, it's directed by Toby Hooper.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be this big budget vampire film, space vampires. And it's got some effects in it, though. Just, have you seen it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember that one.
And you know it's, you love it, don't you?
You know, I only saw it the once, so I can't.
I'm going to loan you my DVD.
Yeah. I just, you know, I just, as soon as you said space vampires, I can totally see them in the meetings. Like, I've got a great idea. Space vampires. Well, oh, that's great.
I'm sure that Toby walked into that with some production and, you know, some pre-production art. But, I mean, the concept was actually, it was fantastic. But
it is. It's great.
For some reason, it was, I think, one of Canon Films. Remember Canon Films?
Ah,
Canon
Films.
I think it was one of their last, I think it's the movie that brought them down.
No, I believe that was Cutthroat Island, actually.
Oh, you're right. It was.
The one they spent $100 million on and made like $1.50. Yeah, that was pretty much it. Killed them all.
I wonder how that movie would have done if Michael Douglas would have played the lead instead of Matthew Modine, as was originally the plan.
I think it would have done better. Yes. I like Matthew Modine, but
well, this is also Michael Douglas coming off Wall Street.
Yeah,
you know, that's true. Not too far removed from Wall Street.
Right.
And he was actually going to do the movie. He'd signed contracts. He was actually going to do it, and then for some reason he backed out of it. And so at the 11th hour,
he sensed something wrong.
Rennie Harlan had to like pull a fast one, and they had to settle for Matt Modine. Now I'm no big Matt Modine fan, but I don't want to. But I don't hate him either.
Right.
But yeah, with Gina Davis wearing the pants and Frank Langella chewing the scenery, Matt Modine kind of just. He's not there.
Yeah.
You know,
this is a whole thing. Another thing, how would you cast this film?
Oh, you know what? That's a great idea because, okay, my guilty pleasure is going to be a pirate movie. And it's a guilty pleasure because no one's ever heard of it.
Okay.
Okay. Only people who watch HBO, like in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, are going to know this movie. Because it just, I mean, as far as I know, no one really knows about it. But it's Tommy Lee Jones and Michael O'Keefe. And I think Jenny Seagrove and, God, who else is in this movie? Max Phipps. If you're a fan of The Road Warrior, Max Phipps played the toady. He's the guy that gets his fingers chopped off when the kid throws the boomerang.
Wow.
And Max Phipps plays this character, one of these pirate characters. In fact, I think he's the kind of protagonist or antagonist in this film. But anyway, my movie is Nate and Hayes, one of the best pirate movies you will ever see, period. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah, here. Dick right there. It's on the bottom.
Oh, he's actually got it.
And it's like Tommy Lee Jones got a beard, and he's all it's the most swashbucklingly cool movie. it's just fantastic.
Nate and Hayes.
Great stuff. Look at the... Oh, see, it's getting average reviews on IMDb. Yeah. But I'm telling you, I am here to tell you.
1983, directed by Ferdinand Fairfax.
It's awesome.
Written by John Hughes.
Wow, I didn't know... That rolling around.
Here's the plot synopsis. This plot synopsis is empty. Add a synopsis. Wow, what a great film.
So this is a guilty pleasure in that you're all going, what in the hell is he talking about?
All right, so you truly have a definite, this is definitely a guilty pleasure.
Well, in a way. So I love it when I hit that extra octave. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's impressive. So very sexy. So if you haven't seen Nate and Hayes, by the way, it is available on DVD, and I think you can get it I'm going to tell you how much bought it for.
It's literally actually
I don't really buy any DVDs that cost more than $12, so this one was $9 at Fry's. So do yourself a favor and watch Nate and Hayes. It's good, clean, fun. Actually, it's kind of dirty too, but it's awesome.
I'd like to point out that an actor by the name of Prince Tuiteka played King of Ponape. I think that's great. Paid the king.
That guy's hilarious too. When you see that dude, it's like they're in the South Pacific, so mm-hmm. they're going through the Fiji Islands and Easter Island and stuff like that. So. Which is great, you know. There you go, right from the start. You know that it's a serious pirate movie because it takes place in the South Pacific. So
I like anything Tommy Lee Jones does, so that's great.
Oh well, man, if you're a Tommy Lee Jones fan and you've probably never seen this movie, yeah. you'll have a heyday.
I mean, he'd obviously been working for a little while because he's been around forever, but he wasn't famous at this point.
No, not by any means. Yeah. I mean, the movie that he did that kind of put him on the map finally was The Executioner's Song. It was the TV movie about Gary Gilmore, but The Betsy was also a big one.
Right.
He did Eyes of Laura Mars, which mm-hmm. I think John Carpenter wrote the screenplay for.
Right.
You know, Jackson County Jail, stuff like that. But he did not, yeah, he still hadn't kind of really risen sure. to stardom. He'd done Rolling Thunder, which is one of my favorite movies with William Devane. That would be a guilty pleasure, you know.
Another one?
Like 10 years ago, that would have been a guilty pleasure because it was kind of like one of those drive-in Saturday night revenge flicks. And most people would be like, oh, that's terrible, man. That movie sucked. No, it's awesome. I was also going to say The Order with Heath Ledger.
Oh yeah,
a movie that completely tanked at the box office and was universally hated by the critics, and I just kind of like it. So that qualifies too.
This would be a great thing to put up on the forums in terms of guilty pleasure.
Sorry, kids.
The other thing would be to not hit your microphone as you're reaching for things. But no,
I'd kill a mosquito.
I would love to hear what people think of various guilty pleasures. You know, the kind of thing where you're just sitting there at 2 a.m. going, "Oh yeah, the movie's on." I love that.
Speaking you of, watch it every time it's on.
Exactly. Yeah, it never stops. That's in my wife's thing, it would be Dirty Dancing. If that movie comes on, I know everything stops, no matter where we are in the movie, and so I have to like go away and do something.
Let me try to think of the classic line that'll make me a dork in front of everybody. it's something to do with baby.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Nobody puts baby in the corner. You know, as much as I hate to admit it, I really liked Patrick Swayze in that era. I know. That's a guilty pleasure.
Yes, Patrick Swayze is the definition
of guilty
pleasure.
It's a guilty pleasure. Yeah. People, if you're a guy and you dig Patrick Swayze, you're kind of a... Yeah. I'm going to use that... I'm tempted to use that word again. You're a you're not heterosexual. And I thought Patrick Swayze was just cool. Because
yeah.
I saw him in The Outsiders, and I thought he was badass.
That I would make a case that he was really good in Point Break. I liked him in Point Break.
Point Break. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Bodie.
The Roadhouse, where he gets to beat people up. That's
well, Roadhouse is dated now. That's one of those movies that when Patrick Swayze was on the big thing, and that was a vehicle for him. And, of course, Sam Elliott's in it, so it's got that. It's got Ben Gazzara.
There was actually somebody in New York that did an off-Broadway play recreation of The Roadhouse, and it was like super campy where they had people on wires being thrown off, and they did all the kung fu, and he had a big stupid mullet wig on. It was really very funny.
Great. Steel Dawn. No, trust me, I didn't think he was like Brando or anything like that, but I did enjoy watching him on screen, and I have to tell you that he also he's done the right thing in his career. Tu Wong Fu.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
That's just...
That was brilliant.
That's excellent. Yeah. And I loved him in Donnie Darko.
Yeah. He's the kind of guy you could use a Quentin Tarantino to, like, reignite. Because he's not as bad as people think he is.
He really does kind of poke fun at his own career in that way. And I think that's very intelligent.
Yeah. He's not like Kurt Russell level at that point, but I think that he could really, if you put him in the right thing, I think
you
he could
put
be
Pat
really
Swayze good. In the right thing, and he could kick it teeth. Yeah. I mean, he's not what you would call a great actor, but he works really hard at his craft.
Yeah,
and he's dedicated, and I appreciate
and
that.
And he seems like a good guy. So
yeah, he seems like
here's,
a great guy.
Here's to Patrick Stewart. No, this one, right? Patrick, engage. No, different guy. Patrick,
we love you, Pat Swayze, and your little brother too.
That's right. He was great in Star Trek: The Next Generation. I'd like to wrap this up. We're coming down to our last few minutes here. I just want to get some quick thoughts on Indiana Jones 4. Do you have any thoughts? Are you excited about that being set in the 1950s? Russian communists, apparently. That's come out now. That's the big thing.
You know, I'm going to love Indiana Jones 4 no matter what.
Did you like all three of the other films?
Yeah.
I need to see the Temple of Dune again. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I've seen it, of course, 15 times, but it's been a long time since I watched it. It was always the weakest of the three.
Sure.
But I think it's one of those movies that might get better with time, so I need to, pop that
Indy 2, Temple of Doom is one of those things. It's got all the same sound effects. It's got all this. It was, filmed in that same kind of era as Raiders. And no, it's not as good of a film, but I think it does... It does get better on more viewings, but that's only my opinion.
I think it's just because it's really super dark. I mean, it's like kids in chains and whips and stuff. And I think it got a little. I think he got away from
chilled monkey brains.
Exactly, and then it went too gross for gross's sake. And it's like, oh, we had snakes last time. We have to have bugs this time. And I think I remember reading even after it came out that Spielberg actually sort of said he made the third movie to sort of apologize for the second one.
And I'm I get that. Yeah, and what's his name? Small Round, Hash Round, whatever his name was.
Short Round.
What was that kid's name?
Ki Kwan.
Yeah. He did a ton of little movies. Like, he's in, come on, it's a good...
The Goonies?
The Goonies.
Yeah.
The Goonies. Is that a guilty pleasure?
That's a total guilty... but that's huge,
Look at Josh
actually.
Josh Brolin in that movie.
I just read today, actually, they were talking about... Sean Astin, they're talking about it's apparently very serious that they're going to do Goonies 2, and it may be live action, it may be animated. But
With the cast?
With the same cast, but with their kids doing the adventure. So it'd be like they
Oh, that's a scream.
It's a great idea. You bring the cast and then their kids would get involved in some adventure.
Who directed The Goonies?
John, there's somebody big.
No, it was like one of the, don't even tell me. If you go to the page, I'll kill you.
It was somebody big. It was
it was one of Spielberg's cronies, like Joe Dante.
I think it was Dante.
Was it Joe Dante?
I'm pretty sure it was Dante. Yeah. The Goonies, 1985. Richard Donner.
It was Dick Donner.
Dick Donner, for God's sake. Chris Columbus wrote the screenplay of Harry Potter fame.
Dick Donner, God.
Wow. Totally forgot
I love
that.
Richard Donner.
That's a great film. That's a great film out of nowhere. But anyway, Indiana Jones 4 coming out next year, apparently, and we're starting to hear things about it. It's got Marion back, which I think is great. I love the fact that they're starting
back. Oh, yeah, yeah. My wife is actually directly related to... Karen Allen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
how about that?
That's very, very cool.
Well, it was weird. We went.
I'm like one. I'm going to touch you right now. Ooh. I'm like
you
one.
Feel it?
I'm like three steps away.
Do you
from,
feel the energy?
From Indiana Jones. How cool is that?
I got actually a pretty cool story about it. We were in Australia on our honeymoon. We're in Sydney, and my wife has cousins who live in Sydney, and we went and visited them. And we were walking around their house, and there's a picture on the wall, and it's Karen Allen in a wedding dress with Missy's cousin.
Hmm.
And so, of course, I see this because Missy probably hadn't a clue. And I said, I see this and I go, excuse me, what is this picture of Karen Allen doing hanging on the wall? She goes, oh, she's my cousin.
Wow.
Really? Yeah. She's your cousin too, Missy. Missy was like, what? And it's not even through marriage. They're like... fourth cousins, I think.
Wow, cool.
So,
why are you not on the set right now?
Well, what I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
That is,
by the way,
I love Karen Allen.
I talked about that for months.
Man, I wanted Karen Allen. She's because I'm into the brunettes thing and she's in Indiana Jones.
I had such a huge crush on Karen Allen.
Crush.
Oh my God,
she was great in Scrooge.
Animal House.
Scrooge was a great. That's an under.
How adorable is she in Animal House?
She's amazing.
Or The Wanderers.
Scrooge is not a guilty pleasure, but it's an underrated film. We could totally do that one of these times. So I have to talk about underrated films.
I've never really seen Scrooge.
I think Scrooge is a vastly underrated film. Anyway, moving
well,
on.
Well, thank you for saying that because that's another thread we have going in the forum.
Oh, is it underrated,
films? And I never would have thought of Scrooge, and that's a great example.
It's starting to come back. It was on like the last two Christmases in a row. People are starting to play it as a Christmas movie, and it's really, I love it. I think that's a great film.
Well, the funny thing about that is that, so far in our thread, mm-hmm. and the way I think about it is underrated films are films I love that I think are underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is kind of from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It's a film that I'm not familiar with that is underrated.
Exactly.
And makes me want to go see it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's some of Bill Murray's best work.
Bill Murray.
It's his best work. It's up there with Groundhog Day for me.
And I have to tell you that I probably caught snippets and bits and pieces of it on pay TV over the years.
Right.
I don't have any recollection of Karen Allen being in that movie, so that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
But here's the moral of my story.
Ah, yes. I'm sorry.
There's actually, it gets better.
Oh, it gets better.
So I'm at a Dallas Comic-Con a year and a half ago. A year ago, October.
Mm-hmm.
And a year ago this month.
Now.
And Karen Allen's one of the guests.
Cool.
And I did a photo shoot on Friday night before the show. Did a big Punisher photo shoot. And I got to we were having a dinner that night late. So I show up at the dinner and Karen's there. And so Mark, my friend who runs the show, had already kind of told her, hey, there's this guy I know who's kind of related to you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, sure.
And of course,
right,
she was okay, whatever, pal.
You and everybody else.
But she kind of already knew because I talked to him on the phone earlier in the day, and I said, well, tell her this. You know, tell her it's so-and-so's, we're related to so-and-so. And so she, like, by the time I got to dinner, she goes, oh, my God. She comes right up to me.
What?
Mark goes, that's the guy I was telling you about. She comes right up to me. We had a great conversation.
Cool.
It was so cool. And
she seems like the nicest person.
And by the way, we did embrace.
Oh.
Yes, as family.
Wow.
As family. I got to hug her and squeeze her. And that was awesome.
You hugged Marion Ravenwood.
Man, that was so cool.
That is cool. Tell
you. And she is so like you think she is.
Yeah.
She is adorable. Yeah. She's a wonderful, warm human being.
Yay.
Continue.
So Indy 4, very cool. We have a couple of minutes left very quickly. The Blade Runner re-release.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
My story took this over, and I apologize. I'm going to embrace Indy 4 no matter what, because it's Indiana Jones, and it's Harrison Ford, and it's Steven Spielberg, and it's George Lucas. Okay, I say that last bit.
Well, it's Steven Spielberg at least.
A tenor of, okay. But I'm kind of, it's a little close to me because Frank Darabont, who is a wonderful, great director, I'm sure you all know his work, Shawshank Redemption, Green Mile, and the upcoming The Mist.
I've heard of The Mist. Yes.
Frank's a good pal, and he was hired at one point by Spielberg and Lucas to write the screenplay for Indy 4.
Right.
And I had the good fortune to read it. And it is unbelievably cool. It's the movie that I know that everyone out there would be shelling out dough to see again and again.
I've heard they're using much of it.
And Lucas didn't like it.
Yeah, but I heard they're using much of it. I heard that a lot of the script is still intact. But that they've made changes. But I heard that it's still pretty much based on his take.
Yeah, so. I know Frank's a little sour over.
Yeah, thing, yeah, yeah. Well, I sent you that. I did a cartoon on my on Booksmarts on ComicSherpa.com. Check it out now.
ComicSherpa.com.
Look for Booksmarts. But I did one where George Lucas is insane, and you actually got to send it to Frank Darabont for me, and he liked it. I thought that was great. That was a big moment for me. I love that.
I forwarded that on to Frank, and he did get a kick out of it.
So we'll wrap it up really quick. I wanted to say something about Blade Runner, the director's cut, final director's cut after the director's cut. Now we're finally adding the more director's
probably
cut.
Probably only
going to
be in major cities, right?
L.A. and New York right now, and I think that's about it. But then it's going to be like a big 5-disc edition.
Well,
I think that's. I wish to God I could drive up to L.A. and see that because that would.
Well, I know that. You know, speaking of Darabont does screenings at the Warner lot at the Warner Theater, and he invites all his friends to come up. Now that's a drive for me a bit, but occasionally when he does something really cool, I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
And I am lobbying right now to have Frank get a print of that to show
at some point.
So we're all going to get to see it on the big screen.
That'd excellent. Because cool. I've read a couple of things about it, and they've made some very good changes. And I mean, we could do a whole show on Blade Runner as far as I'm concerned.
There's a great article in Wired about this very subject.
Yes, this month. I read the article, the interview with Ridley Scott.
Yeah,
so.
it's if you haven't checked it out, you should check it out because it's fabulous.
So it's kind of cool that the
definitive
version.
We all know Nolan has read it.
Yeah, that's right. Nolan has read it, so. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for podcast number 2 of the Tim Bradstreet Experience.
Maybe we can talk more about this Blade Runner thing on the next one, at least maybe fill folks in on what fill folks in on what the timeline is on that. We'll do a little research in the meantime.
Definitely.
And of course, by the time that airs, you'll probably already know about it, but we're going to throw it out there anyway for when the DVD hits and when the film's going to hit
theaters. Also going to be talking about music composers and music scores, I'm sure. That's a big subject for you.
I would love to talk about that because I like to turn everybody on to that kind of stuff. You know, most people have. Okay, let's save it. I could go on all night. So
that was a coming attraction for the next show, podcast number 3. So anyway, we've had
appreciate
a great time.
Your patronage.
Please go to the forum and check stuff out. The Raw forums. Tim has his own section on there, and it's it's really, really great to read people's feedback. So please tell us what you think and what you want to talk about. And ask any questions of Tim. You won't have any for me because I'm nobody, but that's okay. I will ask them.
That's not true because Tom gets sticks his head in there. So
I do.
Tom's presence will be in the house.
Oh, I will. I will definitely throw my 2 cents in. That's for sure. But any questions people have, I think it'd be great to get on the air. So.
Yeah, we love your feedback. And remember that you can find these podcasts. Of course, you know where to get them.
You're listening to them.
But I want you to tell all your friends, too, to go to rawstudios.com and in the menu there to click there on the multimedia tab. and discover the show.
And very soon we hope to be listed on iTunes, which I know that when we did Comics Coast to Coast, when we got onto iTunes, we got a bunch more people. So people just sort of find it through there. So I think that'll be very exciting.
And don't forget our contest.
Yes, the contest to name the podcast where a real piece of actual Tim Bradstreet art is up for grabs. So
grab it.
We'll set up a thread
for that.
Seize
the day.
Seize the day. Carpe that diem, baby.
And you Latin bastard.
Hey, I have an English degree. Basically, all it's good for is, wouldst thou like fries with that, my lord? So, other than that,
so long, folks.
Bye-bye.